Welcome to the Thriving in the Age of Disruption podcast. Today, Dr. Ramesh chats with Chaba Bundik, a seasoned entrepreneur and business advisor with more than 20 years of experience in management, entrepreneurship, and innovation. Chaba's journey is a testament to the power of resilience and strategic thinking. He shares gripping anecdotes from his experiences, which reveal how he not only overcame setbacks, but transformed them into launching pads for achievement. Dr. Ramesh and Chaba discuss the pivotal moments that defined his entrepreneurial path, unveiling the thought processes that empowered him to navigate uncertainties, envision the bigger picture, and hatch business opportunities, all while leading teams with confidence. Tune in to dive deeper into their invaluable insights and embark on a transformative journey towards building an entrepreneurial mindset that thrives in the face of adversity. Remember, setbacks are just detours on the road to success.
Welcome to the Thriving in the Age of Disruption podcast series, Chaba. We are excited to hear from you.
Thank you for the invitation. Indeed, I have been in Vietnam for 15 years now. I used to be entrepreneur with a little bit of IPO experience. I used to be incubator manager, studied venture capital and business incubation in Germany, in the US. It was a program in Hungary before I came to Vietnam, a for-profit business incubator.
You have a very interesting background, especially having worked in Vietnam for so many years.
15 years ago, I defended my MBA thesis in Germany in early July. And 2 weeks later, I found myself in Vietnam. I inherit a rep office and I seen my colleagues are sleeping during the day, playing cards. So I told myself, maybe I have an MBA from Germany, which sounds fancy, but I have to start to learn things from the beginning. I did a couple of things here in Vietnam. I used to run the European Chamber of Commerce. These days, I do three main things. I'm a member of the investment board of the largest deep tech fund of Europe. It's called European Innovation Council's Accelerator. It belongs to the European Union. Time to time, I have some ideas. I want to solve problems and I see situations, problems and solutions differently than most of people. For example, the chamber a few years ago, I've seen that there is a need. Nobody's doing things. So, okay, let me do that. And then it's a successful chamber. This is normally the personal motivation behind my activities. The newest brainchild is helping students, first Vietnamese students, to learn how to get a scholarship abroad, because it's not obvious. It was based on my own journey. Because like when I was like much younger, wanted to study abroad, there was like no information available about that. So it took me 3 years to crack the system, understand what to do, how to write the motivation letter, how to go through an interview. In the last few years, I have 20 Vietnamese young, smart, competitive people to get scholarship all around the world. And we team up with some great people because we thought that the impact can be bigger. We set up some trainings, a platform, help the people to use AI, find the best match between the students and the universities. There are students they cannot afford. So we would like to help them to understand how to get a scholarship, how to get prepared, write motivation letter, write essays, especially the weakness of the Vietnamese student is the personal interview, both at the scholarship level and at the embassy level when they are going for the visa interview. Our success rate is pretty good. So that's the newest brainchild.
You've taken your skills in venture building and you are now creating futures through education.
Yes. You try to optimize things, try to save time, try to make it more fair, even affordable. Even if they just go through the training, there will be hundreds and thousands of people will have a chance to study abroad. Without this, they will have the same journey like I do. Spend years trying, learning and trying again. And especially here in Vietnam, where failure is not really welcome by the society. It's not really easy to go around and tell your stakeholders and friends and family, yeah, I tried again. Yeah, third time. And I'm still like, not there yet.
This is something that we are also very excited to be doing in Impact Velocity. There are many social issues, but not enough is being done to deal with that. It's like there are two extremes. One extreme is very much focused on the social issue, but they don't know how to make it into a sustainable business. And then on the other hand, they're the hardcore businesses. And if only they could use their platform or their thinking to also put the social impact inside, right? If the two came together, then it'll be a lot more sustainable. Tell us a little bit about your personal life.
Oh, I have a beautiful 10-year-old daughter. We speak Hungarian. Her first language is English. because the family language is English, because my Vietnamese is still limited. Her mom is Vietnamese, so the second language is, and because of the school, is Vietnamese, and the third one is Hungarian, which is not easy always to stick to Hungarian. So we have an agreement with my daughter. It's a very special agreement. Before noon, I understand English. Afternoon, interestingly, I understand only Hungarian. A little bit of flexibility. So if something is urgent, is dangerous, of course, use whatever language you want. I'm very proud she speaks very good Hungarian as well.
Excellent. So you cracked the code there with incentivizing your daughter to learn three languages. I feel that in this age of disruption, there are two essential mindsets that we need to have. One is an entrepreneurial mindset, and the second is a crisis-ready mindset. Now, you're someone who's been an entrepreneur, works with entrepreneurs, and is constantly thinking about ideas that can be made into businesses. But there is a big difference between an entrepreneurial mindset and being an entrepreneur, because in an entrepreneurial mindset, you're someone who is being resourceful, you are able to take risks and deal with uncertainty, as well as maybe create value, which is not just financial, but also value for people who are around you. Even if people don't become entrepreneurs and start and run a business, they can definitely develop an entrepreneurial mindset and use that effectively in their lives. You demonstrated that well before you became an entrepreneur for that scholarship, because you were being resourceful. You were not going to be stopped by having failed the first time, but you're going to try the second time and the third time until you got it. So what do you think is missing or works in Vietnam about entrepreneurial mindset and entrepreneurship, as well as your own journey?
That's a very good and very deep question, because while we are talking about these issues, things are changing and the situation is completely different. I'll give you an example. We used to run the largest startup events of Vietnam called Hatch Fair. Started in 2013, we were in the basement of Indochina Plaza before it was officially opened, because that was the only place we could afford and they could host us. And it was very difficult to handpick the first like 200 people and invite them like one by one. And it was 2013. 2019, if I'm not mistaken, before COVID, we had more seed investment in Vietnam than Singapore. The changes in this country is amazing. And there is a lot of very smart Vietnamese people. They go abroad, they study in UK, US. They are under the influence of entrepreneurship and startups and big stories. And now here in Vietnam, the unicorns, and they are coming back. And the Vietnamese dream has changed. So when I came over here 15 years ago, the Vietnamese dream was still like, find a job, go to the bank, work for a multinational company, or work for the state, because it's very stable. If you see what is the Vietnamese dream now, they want to be rich, and entrepreneurship is helping them. But they just see one side of the entrepreneurship. They just see the success story. They just see that once they are successful, they will be very rich, so the society will treat them well. But they just can't see yet, because the schools and the business books are not teaching them well about the whole picture, because everything comes with a cost. Nights, mental health, physical health, family relations, and so on. So there are a lot of things to sacrifice before, even if somebody is lucky enough, get successful. So they can't see the full picture. So how to use entrepreneurship in daylight? So if you don't take any risk in your whole life, then you will be in the same level. If you are okay with that, it's nothing wrong, because entrepreneurship is not for everyone. There should be a certain kind of mindset, could adapt the risk, and we should have this kind of never give up type of attitude, and we have to start again, because it's part of it. Failure is not like something to avoid, it's just a part of it. I'm telling like young wannabe entrepreneurs and students, go to the internet and count how many rockets the SpaceX they blew visually front of the whole world. Right? It's a failure. Or maybe not, because they keep telling that they got a lot of data, which eventually once they are successful is true. In the middle, it's just communication. But this is the kind of mindset we need. So, okay, you screw up things, fine. That's okay. Just learn and don't do the same mistake again. One of the best teaching I learned in Germany, in the very direct way of communication, our professor who was running the business school told us that, listen guys, if you make a mistake, it's fine. If you make the same mistake again, you are stupid, because you were not able to learn from your own mistake. And that's very right. This type of communication, of course, is too direct for the Vietnamese culture, but the message is clear. Just learn from your mistake and do it better next.
An entrepreneurial mindset can be applied in daily life. The attitude of never give up, don't be stopped. The failure is part of the journey, but at least make sure that you learn and don't make the same mistake again. I define crisis as a setback or a failure. Most people at a time of setback or failure, they would give up or freeze and not go further. But then some people actually can move ahead and make decisions and turn around. In your own experience, how have you dealt with a crisis and what has supported you to be effective in dealing with crisis?
I have two favorite examples about that. The financial crisis in 2008, all of our businesses, activities were heavily influenced. I was that time like more in Europe than Vietnam. So in 2010, and we team up with two like literally genius people, members of the Mensa group, and come up with flexible investment strategy. How to be reactive if the financial markets are changing, because the situation was there, like there are different funds, they have the thesis, they have the strategy, and this cannot be changed for 5 years. What if we come up with something more flexible? If some macro data are changing, we invest differently, so we are very reactive. And in 2011, we set up a company for that. And in 2013, because our strategy was a crisis-proof investment strategy. It was just shortly after the financial crisis. So we managed the only IPO in Hungary in that year. So even the newspapers said that, oh, okay, the first company after the financial crisis coming back to the stock exchange. Oh, how great is that? There are always some kind of new opportunities in the crisis. And if you are more creative than the others, it creates some kind of niche market obligation for you. If you can figure out something earlier than the competitors, then it helps you. And the crises are always like cleaning up the market. Those who are not as lucky as you are, or not as flexible, not as creative, they will not be players in the market anymore. And you are there in the bigger market. A recent crisis is the same. So there was the COVID. Almost all my projects have been closed. Like one of my favorite projects at the time, we wanted to open a co-working space and business incubator in Hoi An, brand new building, open the F&B part. And COVID came. My colleagues were asking me like, okay, Csaba, what we will do because tourists are not coming. The other projects are not working. Physically, we cannot travel. So what are we going to do? And we did this IPO. It was a reaction for a crisis. We will come up with something new. And this kind of new project is student recruitment with a new AI, with teaching, with more value than the traditional agents. How the students, they want to study abroad, but they physically cannot go out. Online trainings, sure, they have a lot of issues to solve. So based on the problem and based on the circumstances, we have to come up with something. From my point of view, being an entrepreneur and being crisis resilient is very much the same mindset. There is limited resources. There are the circumstances and you try to use your resources as efficient as you can. And the circumstances are always changing. If it's COVID, if it's financial crisis, like debt, it's inflation, if it's energy prices, like always some problem and you have to be reactive. You have to be adaptive. So it's for me, being entrepreneur and being flexible and react as life or the big picture is forcing you, it's very much the same.
I'm really inspired because I could hear that there is this mantra that you have for yourself. You have limited resources, circumstances are changing, but we can be reactive, be adaptive and flexible. And if you say that enough times to yourself, then you become open to being able to look for that opportunity even in a crisis. And you're never stuck. You're never going to give up. So thank you for sharing that aspect of how you look at a crisis.
We stuck, but we overcome. So everyone has a bad day. Even the best entrepreneurs, even Elon Musk is living in his factory and sleeping 2-3 hours. He's a really successful entrepreneur. And even at his level, with his intellectual capability, with his success level, stuck is part of our journey. The question is how much time you give for yourself being in that period and how quickly you can collect yourself. The emotional cost of entrepreneurship is really significant.
Yes.
People don't talk about that enough. We always talk about success. Recently, we talk about like failure, be okay with the failure. We don't go deep enough. We don't help the young entrepreneurs understand it's not because you are not capable. It's not right. Because you are a disaster. It's just part of your journey. Even the best of the best have the same, but differences, they overcome faster than the average people.
That's right. The ups and downs of entrepreneurship is something that we have to embrace. Sometimes young entrepreneurs are not aware that there are those downs and that they have a say in how they manage that. Because if you're going to give up or if you're not going to do anything about it, then that period becomes a long suffering versus you get back and you get into the game and you go up again. So wonderful. Thank you so much for actually decoding entrepreneurship for us, as well as how to deal with crisis. And I think you're right. Entrepreneurs have firsthand experience in dealing with crisis on a day-to-day basis because many things don't go according to plan for them. Where are you in your spiritual journey? And what is spirituality for you?
I was raised under the European culture, and they always were very much open for different Asian cultures from my childhood. So from my very early age, I think I was like 5 years old when I heard the word Dalai Lama in the radio. And since that moment, I was very much interested in the Asian culture. So it was like the 80s, no internet. I had to go to the library, read everything I could find about Japan, China, India, practiced a little bit of martial arts. And my first attempt, tried to go to Japan. I was practicing Kendo, Japanese, for a long time. Yeah, I found myself in Vietnam 15 years ago. To be able to even just stay here, not to mention being successful in this country, you have to be flexible, open. You have to understand the culture. What are the differences? Starting with very obvious, very basic tourist level, there is a logic. So why people in the situation act different? There should be a good reason. Yeah. And it comes with culture, with life, how Vietnamese people, the Asian people raise their kids. And it comes with spirituality as well. You see how Vietnamese people are praising the ancestors. Then there is Buddhism, right? And currently, spiritually and culturally, I'm somewhere in between the two cultures. Because I'm a foreigner, I will not be a Vietnamese, right? But I have been in Asia for quite a long time. I'm not like that 100% European anymore. I go to Brussels, listen to the presentation, best of the best projects from Europe, because we give them a lot of money for the best of the project. Therefore, the competition is very high. And I see my fellow jury members, how harsh they are and just killing the startups.
Oh my God.
Why are so you cruel? When I'm back to Vietnam, listening to startups, I'm still very harsh on this network and much more soft than like a few years ago. In terms of spirituality, one thing is getting stronger, probably comes with age, is reflecting back to the startups I'm more and more interested in, or the ventures I would like to create. It's being useful and helping others. It's getting more important for me to set up system, can be self-run without me, solving problems and make some impact. What I'm trying to do and demonstrate is how to use entrepreneurship to solve some kind of social problems in a sustainable and even profitable way. There are a lot of issues we try to solve with charity or based on donation could be solved based on business logic. There is a value, somebody is ready to pay for that, and it can be self-run. And this is what I'm more and more gravitating to a business in the social impact field, because there is a trap there of kind and nice social people. They have to think business, which is very difficult. And it's sometimes much easier to help hardcore business people to find the right balance between making money and being useful. This is what I try to demonstrate with projects. And I would like to repeat with a couple of other things in the future. This is how I can see the changes in my spiritual journeys, how it impacts my daily life, my decisions, and my orientation.
Wow, that's really profound how you've connected to this aspect of your purpose of being useful, that in leveraging on your strengths, creating the system, solving a social problem, and creating impact through that, also as a demonstration for others to follow.
And one of the issues is the upcoming challenge of AI. And currently, I think nobody really can honestly tell what will happen in 5 or 10 years. Can be very good, can be very bad. But there are a couple of practical questions. Okay, how to prepare my kid for the future? What job should I orientate my kids to? And there is no good answer. Probably the best reasonable answer I recently heard was an interview with Elon Musk. He said, be useful for the society. That is not placeable. There will be people, there will be problems. AI will not be able to solve that. Be useful for the society. So this logic is like even helping to have some kind of orientation, ideally, because going back to our original topics like the uncertainties and how to react to changes and crises, AI will change a lot of things. Just see in Vietnam, within 1 year, how many new services popped up out of the blue using ChatGPT. A year ago, nobody in Vietnam was really talking about that. Then it was like bombshell. And Vietnamese people are very good in finding business opportunities. Just the beginning, who is replaceable, who is not? There are a lot of things will be replaced by AI. The human-to-human interaction will not be.
It's an area of concern for us. And so we picked the three commitments. And one was the commitment to people's inner development and how as human beings we can understand the systems view and how we are interconnected and interrelated, and also the impact of unintended consequences. And the second one was to look at planet renewal. And the third was about prosperity sharing. And I think prosperity sharing is a big area, from the youth to those who are aging, to also many social issues. So how do we actually bring all three together is an area that we are concerned about in Impact Velocity. And I know you've got some great ideas, and you had at some point worked with UNDP as well here in Vietnam, right?
You run the UNDP's Social Incubation.
Accelerated Social Innovation Labs. Yeah, that's right. Do you think it's possible for us to live a simple life?
Simple life. I think it's more than possible. It's necessary, because look at the big numbers. We overconsume the resources, right? So we don't have enough, even just raw materials. Imagine that, like, buying a car in Vietnam costs like 3 times more than in Europe because of the tax. Why is that? Because if the people could buy cars easier than as it is now, you will not be able to go from one part to the other in the city, because there will be huge traffic jam. You can't ask people, like, individuals don't consume more. Why is that? Because the whole society is saying that the others are more successful and you are a loser. In Southeast Asia, you need the status symbols, because this is how the others will talk about you. It makes impact on you, your wife, your father-in-law. Young Vietnamese get questions of the distant relatives about, okay, did you finish the university yet? Okay, not yet. Okay, fine. You have the boyfriend, the husband, and now why not? What is wrong with you? So I don't have to tell you how much pressure on people in this culture. Part of it is being successful, being rich, have the house, the car, whatsoever. So how to tell people to have a simple life? That's a very good question, because we have to have some kind of reasonable consumption. We can't take the prosperity from people. So if people can't feel that they live better than 5 years ago, it comes with some mental issues, right? They will not feel good because society will not treat them well. How to find the balance between feeling that I'm just more successful than 5 years ago and not overconsume the resources we have? That's probably one of the biggest questions mankind in these years, because somebody has to, but you can't tell people, like, okay, don't change your mobile phone, because the whole economy is telling that, especially the consumerism. People have their own problem. Even buying something helped them to have some few minutes of feeling good. Okay, at least I could buy this. So maybe my life is difficult. Maybe my husband is difficult. Maybe my work is difficult. The mother-in-law, whatever. At least I have few minutes of peace of mind because I could buy the new clothes.
Yes.
Do I really need that? Maybe not. So how to find the balance between individual progress and not overconsume things we definitely don't need? I don't have a solution for that. What I'm thinking a lot is, two things are missing in the business management books. So these books were written based on one concept, how to allocate the resources. Like, you have like limited resources in how to allocate your money. And the books are not talking about two things, health and time. So how to have a quality life, not only when you are too old and you have a lot of money and now you can travel, but find the balance between chasing money, being rich, successful, and have a reasonable life. So not working 20 hours per day. Sometimes as entrepreneurs, we have to, by the way.
Yes.
But in long term, we can't do that, because there will be no life. Even like Warren Buffett is telling that he could buy everything physical in this world. He can't buy time. Once you reach a certain level of the maturity of the company, have a better balance. Not chase the unicorns. That's one of my favorite topics here in Vietnam. There should be a balance between your individual progress, the company progress, your own life and time, how you spend it. So like, time and health is coming hand in hand.
Wow, awesome. I really love that. Finding the balance between individual prosperity and consumption. Because a lot of how we consume is maybe not just for ourselves, but it is partly to keep up with the Joneses, and it's partly about societal pressure. But can we have the courage really to consume what we need and not what we want? And so if you had to define thriving.
Find a meaningful life, work on that, because it's not just like you make a decision and you are there. So it's finding the balance between the spiritual and the physical part of life, including money, of course, which is very important. Find the right balance between the different levels and different aspects and different layers of life.
Wonderful. We talk about sustainability, and you reference it to responsible consumption. But we look at sustainability from an individual perspective. We say it's an ongoing thriving of a living system. And what's your own view about sustainability?
especially for leaders in different organizations, especially in business. We leave things behind better than we got it. If we join a company, we are company leaders, we can't fix all the issues of the company, right? But at least we make the company better for the people, for the stakeholders, for the clients, as then we inherit it. It's same for sustainability. So we born here, right? We hopefully have a chance to find our purpose. And if we are lucky enough and we can make our efforts, we leave things behind a little bit better than we started. So immediately we can contribute a little bit. We can't solve all the problems, right? It's impossible. It's out of the capacity of one human being. Everyone could do a little bit.
Exactly. But you simplified it.
Oh, that's my superpower. I'm just simplifying.
It's really great. I've enjoyed our conversation. What's your favorite book?
Lord of Rings.
Ah, lovely. Your favorite travel destination?
The rest of the world I've never seen.
Okay. And if you could have dinner with anyone, who would it be?
Nikola Tesla, probably.
And what's your guilty pleasure?
Coffee.
And the best advice that you've ever received?
I have a big disadvantage. I can't hide my feelings and thoughts. I don't have poker face. Whatever it's on my face. The only thing I could develop over the years is not think about anything when something happens and that nothing is on my face. Eventually, I learned that it doesn't make any sense because the energy you use to hide these kind of things, you could use it much better. And eventually, this is who you are. So if you don't like something, you don't like something. Or you like someone, then you like someone. That's you. I got this advice 10 years ago. And so if there is like a balance between what you think, what you say, and what you do, that helps you to have a simple life. Like, I try not to lie too much because my memory is not good. So I can't remember what I thought to these people or that people. It's much more simple just to
be straightforward and be open.
And be direct and cut the crap.
Excellent. Thank you very much. You have been open and candid and you really shared from your heart. I've enjoyed our session because I think a lot of what you shared, especially about being useful and what you are doing in pursuing that. Thank you so much, Abad.
Hope to see you soon in person.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Ramesh and Chava, for the deep dive into what makes an entrepreneurial mindset that thrives in the face of change and challenge. Whether you're a startup founder, a seasoned business owner, or someone intrigued by the entrepreneurial world, follow Dr. Ramesh now on LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to join in this journey toward having a powerful, crisis-resilient, and entrepreneurial mindset.